Last night at midnight, the United Automobile Workers Union began a nationwide strike after failing to come to a contract agreement with General Motors. The two sides are struggling to see eye to eye over benefits, wages, and recent closures of plants. Throughout the country, all 46,000 GM workers from the UAW will stop working in their first national strike since 2007. And it's unclear how long the walkout will last, since both GM and the UAW are standing firm in what they're willing to offer at the negotiating table. Joining me now to discuss is Neil Beaudet, auto reporter for the New York Times. Neil, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So give us a specific thing here. I mean, what is the UAW demanding from GM?
Well, GM closed four plants, actually three plants. They plan to close four. They've kept one open, and the UAW wants those. They also have a two-tier wage system where veteran workers make a higher level than new hires, and they want that gap closed. They want new hires to come in more at a higher wage than and a closer wage than what the veteran workers make. Those are the two main things that they're after: jobs, reopening plants, and then closing that wage gap.
And what's GM's hesitation on all this?
Well, GM is in a competitive situation, so they don't want to raise their cost of labor. They already have higher cost of labor than most of the foreign companies that have non-union plants in the South. So they're concerned about that. GM does have about a million units of excess production capacity, so they do want to take some close some plants and bring it in line with where the market is. They're concerned that U.S. sales, China sales are softening. They're slowing down. They're concerned about the U.S. economy. So they don't want to open or keep open plants that they don't really need. One of the ones that they closed is in Lordstown, Ohio. It made the Chevy Cruze small car. Hardly anybody is buying small cars. So that's a plant that was making vehicles that really was not selling, and the sales of that vehicle have plunged over 5 years. So GM's hesitant to reopen that.
The UAW is under active investigation by the FBI. What's happening there?
Yes, this is a wild card in this whole thing. This investigation has been going on for several years. They've found senior union officials, including the current president, Gary Jones, using union money for very lavish personal travel, personal spending, tens of thousands of dollars, and in total, more than millions of dollars for golf in Palm Springs, renting luxury villas, $400 bottles of champagne, hundreds of dollars on expensive cigars, thousands and thousands of dollars on golf equipment, all billed back to the union. They've had nine people charged so far. Gary Jones, the president, has not been charged, but at the end of August, his home was raided by federal agents. He's very much in the sights of the FBI on this.
Between that and the fact that the auto industry is struggling right now, how much leverage does the union actually have for a successful strike?
Not much. And you have to remember that any strike that hurt GM would hurt the workers as well. A union worker can make on the order of $1,200 a week. If they stay out on strike for more than 8 days, they get money from the union, but it's only $250 a week. And there are a lot of workers, they have mortgages, they've got car payments, they've got truck payments. It's very hard to exist on that kind of a drop in income. And on top of that, if any long, prolonged strike that hurts GM and cuts into their North American profits means that the union workers themselves are going to get smaller profit-sharing checks next March. They get profit-sharing checks each year after the close of the fiscal year. And in the last 3 years, union workers have averaged $11,000 in profit-sharing checks, which is a good chunk of money. So if they stay out long enough and GM's North American profit goes down, well, their profit-sharing checks are going to go down too. So I don't think the chances are high that they will that we will have a long, bitter strike. I think this puts some pressure on both sides, and they will at some point reach an accommodation.
Neil, this is not the first time we've seen strikes at GM. There was a big strike in 1970. There was another strike in 2007. Can we put this strike in context here compared to those
Sure.
other strikes? Yeah.
Sure. And I'm glad you mentioned those two contrasts. 1970, the strike went on for weeks and weeks. The union depleted its strike fund by paying their workers. They ended up having to take loans from the Teamsters and other unions because they were so depleted. After that strike, it hurt GM. They ended up giving wages, and it really set General Motors and the Detroit automakers on a path to very difficult times, because they had higher costs than the Japanese automakers, and it didn't end well for either side. In the 2007 strike, they went out, and it was only 3 days. They stayed out for 3 days. It upped the pressure on both sides. They came to an agreement. I think you're more likely to see this strike follow the 2007 pattern than the 1970 pattern.
What about President Trump? I mean, he's pledged to bring back auto jobs to the United States. Is there any connection here? Are we seeing any? Will this strike affect support for the president in 2020, or is it still too early to tell?
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell, but there is an element here. I mean, General Motors plants are in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Tennessee, Kentucky. They have a truck plant in Texas. Most of those are swing states, important states. The president did promise to add automotive jobs. Any financial hardship that the workers suffer are, you know, in contrast to what the president promised. He has at times tweeted about prodding GM to open that plant in Lordstown, Ohio. Just 2 weeks ago, he met with the CEO of General Motors, Mary Barra. It's not clear exactly what they discussed, but you can bet that the idea of opening plants and putting more plants in the U.S. did come up in that talk.
Neil Baudet is an auto reporter for The New York Times. Neil, thanks so much.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.